say, for example, we heard one of the Theravada monks say at one of the ASA meetings a couple of years ago that a duck can't lay a chicken's egg. Okay? So this is, which seems sensible enough when you think about it, genetically. But, so the implication being that the bhikkhunis in existence today are so-called Mahayana bhikkhunis, and that being ducks, they can't lay any Theravadan chickens, okay? And so this particular argument is that goes the monks are quite happy to have Mahayana bhikkhunis, but they won't accept it if you have Theravada bhikkhunis. And so I wanted to look at these ideas, and of course what we find when we look at what the nature of these schools are and the ideas that we have about these schools, we see that these are all historical constructs. We have these ideas, what is Mahayana, what is Theravada, and wanted to have a look in a bit more depth. Now, there is actually a critical vinaya issue, which is that if there are two communities which have had sangha bheda, which have had a schism, then when the community has a schism, then those two groups can't perform sangha kamma together. Okay, so this is a vinaya issue, and so then the question arises: is there an actual schism which has split, again, so-called Theravada and so-called Mahayana? Is that a schismatic relationship? The more and more I started to look at that, the more I realised that there were a lot of major inadequacies, not only in the traditional presentation of the different schools and the relationship between them, but also in the academic presentations of it, the scholarly presentations. And I think there are some major flaws in how the modern scholars, especially the Western scholars, have approached this particular topic, and a lot of the work that's been done is very deeply problematic. The Western scholars have tended to see the Sri Lankan tradition as being the most historically authentic, because it has parts of it have been authenticated through the archaeological record. Okay. Unfortunately, one of the problems is that there are other aspects of the Sri Lankan record which have not been authenticated by the archaeological record, and which, in my opinion, are extremely implausible and unreliable. Okay. But those have also been adopted and have informed the discourse in Western scholarship about the formations of the schools and so on. So one strand is, okay, when was the first schism? Okay, so we had the first split in Buddhism, which of course was between what we call the Staviravada, or the some of us call Staviras or Thera. Stavira is just the Sanskrit pronunciation of Thera. So you call Theria or Theravada, or Stavira or Staviravada, and Mahasangika, okay, being the other group. Now, one of the myths which has been perpetuated in modern scholarship is that the Theravada, okay, is more or less equivalent to what we call Theravada today. Okay? And now this is deeply problematic as an assumption. Okay? The other myth is that Mahasangika somehow evolved into Mahayana. Okay? And so what we have is this idea that at that first schism, we emerged that grouping that we know today as Theravada and Mahayana, okay? And this schism, according to the Sri Lankan tradition of the deeper ones, that occurred immediately after the Second Council, okay? So that's about 100 years after the Buddha, okay? So if we take this particular reasoning seriously, we start to say that as close as 100 years after the Buddha, we already had two distinct groupings in the Sangha, a schism between them based on vinaya grounds, because the Second Council was about vinaya grounds, so they couldn't agree on vinaya grounds. One group wanted to keep strict vinaya, and they were called Theravada. Another group didn't want to keep strict vinaya, they were called Mahasangika, and they became more or less Mahayana. Okay? So this is a picture which we get from a lot of modern scholarship, and if you read popular accounts of the history of early Buddhism, then you read these kinds of ideas again and again and again. I don't think there's any foundation to those ideas. We need to really kick them out of our discourse on these things. First problem is that the Theravada group at that time isn't in no way equivalent to what we call modern Theravada. Okay? It was a wing of the Sangha, okay, or which encompassed many different, what was to become many different schools. Okay, so there are many schools descended from that earliest Theravada, one of which is the Sri Lankan school, which we know today as Theravada. Okay, so this is one problem. Second problem is that there's no particularly strong or organic connection between what we call Mahasanghika and Mahayana. Okay, Mahayana is not a Vinaya school or a monastic lineage. Mahayana is like a set of teachings and doctrines and so on, and that gradually developed and became more popularized and so on within all the early schools, okay, and not just within the Mahasanghika. And if we look at the history, we see that, for example, Xuanzang refers repeatedly to the Mahayana Staviras, okay, not just once or twice, but many, many times. There were these Mahayana Staviras, these Mahayana Theravadins, who were living in monasteries all over the place. We hear of Mahayanists living in the same monastery with those of other early schools. And if you look at the Mahayana teachings and so on, I mean, I can't go into it in too much detail, but if you look at, for example, the teachings of Nagarjuna, Asanga, Vasubandhu, and some of the great Mahayana philosophers, actually, when they refer to texts and scriptures of early schools, they tend to more use the scriptures of the Sarvastivadin school rather than Mahasanghika. Okay? So there obviously is some similarities between some Mahasanghika ideas and certain Mahayana ideas, but there are similarities between all the schools, and they all have some ideas in common. Now, there's no hard and fast distinction. So this idea that somehow Mahasanghika became Mahayana is very, very misleading and very mistaken. It's also misleading and mistaken to think of Mahayana as being a movement which didn't take Vinaya seriously, okay? And so this is something which the Theravadins often imagine. But, you know, the very fact that in China you have half a dozen Vinayas means, well, obviously they took Vinaya very seriously. And you have these whole schools which were devoted to very careful observance of the Vinaya. I mean, there's no, you know, way that you can say that Theravada and Mahayana split along those lines.